Hello, Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network listeners. I am Jeff Hawkins, co-host of Shake Them Ropes, with a very special announcement. If it's been a while or you've never listened to us before, the original gang is back, myself and Rob McCarron, back talking wrestling. We have no idea where this show's going to go, where we're going to keep any of the old bits or any of the old things in there. It's going to be a process. It's going to be a journey, and we'd like for you to come along with us. Only on Shake Them Ropes on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Super Jamcast. I'm John, joined by David McDonald. It is Thursday, 21st of May, 2026. This is episode 409, North London forever. I won't do it again. I've already
serenaded
Damon before we started recording. But yeah, we've been singing that nonstop in this household. What a time to be alive, Damon.
What a time to be alive. Champion. You didn't. Introduce yourself properly as
Champion Joel. Yes.
Yep. Premier League Champion Joel. So again, we're a couple days removed. We still drunk on happiness and good vibes, right?
Yeah, it was just like a weight being lifted off my shoulders. By the way, we did put up some free audio, instant reaction on the Patreon, so anyone can access that. It's not behind the paywall, so if you got the Patreon feed, you'll be able to listen to my instant reaction literal minutes after Arsenal secured their first Premier League title for 22 years. And I'm just feel as light as a feather, Damon, just good, floating from one place to the next, being absolutely insufferable at school. There's a little boy in my class who's a Man United fan. Fucking hell, he is utterly sick of me by this point.
I bet.
The whole class, I like, they're just groaning every time I bring it up. I'm trying to crowbar in every situation. I was supposed to do an assembly on Wednesday, and it's like a key stage 2 assembly, so for year 3, 4, 5, and 6 class, and I get sent the materials for it every week. There's some subscription we've got for this thing called Primary News, so every week is like a little presentation about whatever the hot news topic is for that week. So they sent me one for the one that I was supposed to do assembly on Wednesday, and would you fucking believe it, it's all about Man City winning the FA Cup.
Are you
previous
fucking
Sunday. I was like, fuck that noise.
Yeah.
No way are we doing that. I'm making my own assembly here. So it just turned into story time with Mr. Abraham. And I was just sitting there telling them about my experiences last time we won the league and why Chelsea and City are oil cheats and not respectable football clubs.
Kids crying. what a day.
Go on, mate.
No, I was just going to ask, are there kids in your class that are Arsenal fans?
Not really, no. Oh. one of them kind of likes Arsenal, but he's a talky United fan. The rest of them have got no interest in football. Actively putting them off it by just being so obnoxious about it. Yeah, it's I'm in my element. And you know what's happened as well, right? I don't know. You could probably tell, Damon, my voice is a bit strained.
A little bit.
All the celebrations. But I realize when I get cross and start yelling, I sound exactly like the Arsenal manager, Mikel Arteta, when he's shouting. I just lean into that. So I'm just stomping around my classroom, just challenging Mikel Arteta. Anytime someone does something I don't like, I'm going, no, this is not the standard, guys. This is nowhere near. I do not accept this. This fucking shit, guys.
Oh, these kids are going to go far in life. I can see it now. Just nine out of 10 will be almost
absolute monster. What I've been doing, just nonstop scrolling. And I know it sounds like such an awful way to celebrate a title win, but just my x.com for you feed, the suggested feed, has just become absolute crack straight into my veins. It's a mixture of like really sort of mawkish compilation videos that basically sum up all those, you know, conflicting emotions and all the shit that we've been through as Arsenal fans over the last 22 years, like the crap football that we've had to watch whilst other loaded up oil money teams and some legitimate teams, you know, Man United, Liverpool, Leicester, we'll let them off, have, you know, taken all the glory. And yeah, as I've been watching that stuff, watching the footage of like the Arsenal players celebrating and just little things like that and all the parties, I've had moments where I've just been welling up and I've just been in tears for like a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
And then I'll swipe to the next thing and it's just receipts, like all the dickheads from who support other teams, rival clubs and Man City players and Man City fans who've just pissed us off and been, you know, giving it large over the last season, just giving it back to them with both barrels. So every single one of those receipts, every single person who said something unkind about us or made fun of us over the last, you know, 12 months, it's just the Arsenal fans don't forget, man. They do not forget. So every single one of those has been receipts been paid back in full. So it's just been unbelievable. Just an absolutely addictive time for me. I've booked my trip. So, okay, so we've won the Premier League. We've got this match against Crystal Palace on Sunday, which just going to be an absolute party because Palace, they got a European final 3 days later. We've got ours coming up next Saturday. So I assume both teams are just going to put the reserves out and it's just going to be a big party. So I thought I'll take Esther to watch that at the pub. We'll watch that on TV. So that'll be fun because I won't be stressed at all.
No.
She'll get to see the trophy being lifted and I think that'll be a really lovely moment for us. And then the following Saturday, I will be going up. I keep saying going down. Geographically, I'm going northeast. So I'm going taking the trip northeast to London and I'll be watching Arsenal against PSG at a fan viewing on the South Bank. So close to like London Eye, Westminster Pier with a few friends. So that should be good. They are doing a screening at the Emirates Stadium, but it looks really expensive. So I'll just watch it, you know, with a few beers, hopefully sunshine next to the River Thames. So it'll be a good atmosphere and hope for the best there. You know, I think going into that match with confidence, PSG are like absolute world-class team and they're the best team in the world. So they're favourites and rightly so, but you never know. I think we can match them. Certainly give them a game and going into that with confidence. I don't see any reason why we shouldn't beat them. If we are at the top of our game and do what we need to do, I think we might surprise some people. So I'm quite bullish on that one.
Will there be a hangover, you think? A little.
No way. Okay, no, okay. I think the players are going to be locked in. They know how much this means. Like we've never won the European Cup before. So, you know, if we don't win it, fine. But just as long as we give our best, but again, I don't know. I've just got a funny feeling. I'm feeling confident on this one. And there'll be a parade the following day. So whether that's one trophy or two trophy, that remains to be seen. But, you know, they'll be doing the open top bus going around streets of Islington, around the Emirates Stadium. So I'll stick around for that. So, yeah, just feeling great at the moment. And just so many little things I've remembered and got emotional about. I took my nephew, well, Mally's nephew, Indy. So, yeah, he's a Thai person. So when I lived in Thailand, like when I first moved there in 2011, he was about 4 years old, like same age that Arthur is now. And I inflicted Arsenal fandom upon him. I bought him Arsenal shirts and I was like, you're an Arsenal fan now, kid. And he rode with it. He was into it. But, you know, he didn't know at the time that sort of condemning him to absolute banter. Yeah. So he's, he'll be like, I don't know, 15, 16 years old now. He came over to London to visit us in 2014, I want to say. So he would have been about 7 or 8 years old. And I took him to an Arsenal game, took him to the Emirates Stadium to watch Arsenal against Watford. So I've still got the photos of that. And I just thought about him because he sent me a message on Instagram saying like, oh, Uncle Joel, we finally did it. I'm crying. I can't believe it. I'm so happy. And I just remember that. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe it.
It paid off.
Just all those little things, all these people and others have said it, but you know, I've celebrated Arsenal title wins before. You know, I had 1998, 2002, 2004, but there's a whole generation of fans who've never seen us win a title before. So this one's for them, really. You know, I've enjoyed my title wins and don't get me wrong, like I'm absolutely loving this one, but I'm just thinking about all those young fans who've grown up in this extremely online era where they're just getting like mocked left, right and center. Now, finally, they've got a title win to celebrate. And you could see how much it meant to people. Because when I was recording with you on Tuesday night, I didn't know what was going on at the time, but there were like tens and maybe 100,000 people streaming out of their homes, not just in North London, all across London. People were just getting on trains and buses and bicycles and just taking it down to the stadium. And it's just like this heaving mass of joy and celebration. You know, no trouble, no criminality, no arrests, violent, nothing like that. Just an absolute party, like an impromptu carnival. You know, it wasn't planned. There was I saw nothing online like, okay, if Bournemouth get a result, we're all going to meet here. It was not like that at all. It was just an impromptu thing. It happened and everyone was like, fuck, this is incredible. Let's get down to the stadium. And, you know, you see the difference between that and other Premier League clubs when they have won trophies where the celebrations have been somewhat muted. Mm-hmm. I think this is a proper fucking football club. We are big. We are massive. And you know, as I said before, I hope this turns us into a juggernaut. But yeah, I've just been basking in the glory of it and just so proud of the players and the manager, Mikel Arteta. When he came to us, we were a joke. We were a laughing stock. But he fixed us and he made us believe and made us proud to be Arsenal fans again. And no one can ever take that away from us. I'm just on cloud nine, Damon. This is incredible stuff. But I could also compartmentalize that joyful side of winning the league with also the absolute schadenfreude of just sticking two fingers up of all the people that have pissed me off over the season. So, one Man City player, Ryan Cherki. So, when I went to the cup final in March, we're 2-0 down. And this little prick, he just starts doing kick-ups. He flicks the ball up. He's just doing kick-ups in the middle of the match. And if I remember correctly, one of the Arsenal players just absolutely flew into and wiped him out. I was like, you disrespectful little fuck. That's going to come back. There's a receipt coming for that. So I just took immense joy in watching the City players crying, him crying at the final whistle after the Bournemouth game. And I was like, do kick-ups now, you fat cunts.
Doesn't it feel good to finally to be able to do that? Like you could do anything you want to do. And you can say whatever you want and you can justify whatever, but it just doesn't hold the same strength until the TV graphic pops up that you're the fucking champions. You know what I mean? Then,
yeah, that was it. Like, just the graphic, the visuals, there was a little clip. It was about 5 seconds long from, I think it was like the Premier League account that showed like an Arsenal flag in the background and the Premier League trophy in the foreground with red and white ribbons tied to it. And I just started crying. I couldn't, just that, when I was like, oh my God, just those visuals, like exactly what you said, Damon, Arsenal Premier League champions. I still can't handle it when I see it.
Yeah. Like I think about like in those scenarios, I think of you and Dan and even like your friends. Did I meet Sips? I don't think I ever did. I'll call them the tweeners. Like you had one, but you were young and maybe you didn't appreciate it at the time as much. I mean, you probably did, but again, it's a long fucking stretch and you don't know when the next one's coming. As much as you think that whatever, like it's not an everyday occurrence. And when it is an everyday occurrence, it's kind of becomes very bleached, you know, very, very sterile. I feel for like fans like you who've been there for the longest time, and it's like, okay, I remember this feeling. I think I like old people, like, and they think I'm gonna be put in the ground and I'm not gonna see another one. And they got a taste of it again, you know what I mean? And then just like you said, the people who a complete generation has come and one on top of it, probably that, yeah, in this day and age where it's just very easy to pop online and just, you know, spew and for 22 years, you guys were catching punches and kicks and you were down on the ground many times in the turtle position, just as they were laying the boots there. But again, don't you think though, not that all of it was worth it, but don't you think it makes it sweeter? Don't you think it makes it taste even better?
Absolutely. Yeah. How could it not? And again, I don't think you get scenes like you did on Tuesday night if, you know, we were winning the title every 3-4 years. That wouldn't happen. It was just the perfect storm of all those emotions being and all that, you know, tragedy and heartache and resentment being built up over all that time, but still that unshakable belief, even while we were rock bottom, I'll say rock bottom, I mean in relative terms, but even when we were absolute shit, still having that passionate fan base who didn't stop believing, didn't stop following the club. Yep. That's so special. You can't buy that. You can't manufacture that.
That's what I can't understand, people who don't enjoy sports. I cannot. It's like people who don't like music. You know what I mean? Like, how does that happen? And I understand that there are people that are just like, okay, they have a passing interest in some sports, but they're into other ones. I mean, I'm perfectly guilty of that. I just don't understand the idea of nothing, none of it. Like, who hurt you? You know what I mean? Like, what happened in your life that it hurt you so bad that you can't enjoy you? Like, you can't hitch your wagon to that. And I'm not saying go out there and smash up a fucking pub if your team loses. But what I am saying is there's something magical about following a team year in and year out and year in and year out. And sometimes you get close. Sometimes you fucking shit the bed. Sometimes you never had a chance. But sometimes you do. And sometimes you get close. And sometimes magic strikes. And it's like those moments. And you could see how that instantly becomes a shared moment between not only you and your family and the people in your life, but now hundreds of thousands of people all over the world who are fans of this club, like all at one time. You're all together. You're all united. You know, it's that's the magic of sports. It really is. And that's why I'm a sports fan. Because as much as it pains me every fucking year, I'm hopeful that it's, you know, I kind of equate it to, in some ways, people who hitch their wagon to religion, where there are times in life where it's utmost of joy and you can understand why there's a higher power or something, right? But then there are times in life where it's just you're in the fucking bottom scrape in the barrel and you can't imagine that there is a God out there that would even remotely do this to you, right? And then, you know, you're hoping that and living your life as a good person, hopefully, with the idea of, okay, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. Now, there are people that don't believe that. I don't know where I stand, to be quite honest with you. It's hard for me to fathom the fact that there is a other place that we ascend to and we are it and we're conscious of it. I mean, that aside, you get my point, though. It's like they're riding and dying with it. And I don't know. I find that builds character. I find that builds community. I feel that builds I hate people. You know that as well. You know that more than anybody. And our listeners probably have a good clue that I'm not the biggest social person in the fucking world. In fact, I actively avoid situations. But the idea of that community of you're it, you won, you got the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, and everyone is enjoying that and celebrating that. Like I can't see how that's wrong.
Yeah, like, name another event that would have 100,000 people pouring out their homes to celebrate on the streets all night long.
The end of war, maybe. You know what I mean? Right? Like the end of World War II, probably, you know? But like, yeah. Like,
and I think even the most sort of hardened anti-Arsenal fans and voices have kind of begrudgingly acknowledged that, you know, that's pretty fucking cool.
Yeah.
You know, that's a proper football club and this is good for football.
1,000%. I mean, look, there are people that root against you. And there are people that, quite honestly, you know, I'm sure there are. Is it Tottenham that's like your biggest rival?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure they're not fucking thrilled right now. And I get that. But this is not like it's City. And it's not like it's like, maybe this is a bad example, but it's not the Dallas Cowboys who are just so easy to hate. It's not you know, what the fucking Yankees, you know, where you're just like, ugh. Like, this is, I don't know, you know. Yeah, maybe I'm just picking sides because you're on a side, but I don't know. It just seems very organic, and it and I'm from a distance watching it. It just feels like a very organic thing. And truth be told, let's be honest here. Like City's first win, that was an incredible sports day. Like just watching people react to them coming back and other teams scoring and winning, and you know, people are on their phone, and you know, like that is sport. That is that's an unbelievable fucking day. And I like, trust me, that day I couldn't be more happy for Man City fans. And I was telling Joel before we even got on, I was like, you know, back, it felt like, you know, Main Road and all that stuff, you know, that they were the underdog, the noisy neighbors, you know, they were just the bastard stepchildren. Of it felt like, and again, I'm talking as a person from a great distance, seeing this, and not really getting all the intricacies and everything that's involved in that rivalry, and in that city, in that part of the country. It felt very like, oh my God, these guys finally did it. He finally fucking did it. People lived their entire lives not thinking they would ever see that, and they saw it. But it's like now, it's like, oh my God, just what a sterile, just. Like, I hate to be this guy, but sometimes winning too much is not good for you. There's only so much cake you can fucking eat, you know? And sometimes you need to lose. Anyway, fuck them. Fuck that. Champion, Joel. Again, I was kind of riding your excitement and everything about it, like just watching stuff and I said on the show, I said, I couldn't be happier for you and Dan and everybody who's passionate about the team and follow them and, you know, just love it. I love it. I love the fact that the family's involved in it. And, you know, it just feels good.
Yeah, just a great moment. And again, I think I have been able to appreciate, yeah, like you said, when City won that first title, whilst, you know, there's the asterisk next to it in terms of where that money came from, I could kind of dig the vibes of that day with the Aguero last minute winner and these fans who just had absolute just chronic failure over the last decades and decades, you know, getting their moment of joy. And Leicester City managing to win it and those fans getting a taste of glory. And even Liverpool, it was in the middle of COVID and I felt bad for them because that was the case. But them finally getting to have a moment and winning it last season as well, you know, as much as Liverpool might annoy me, and there's the, you know, rivalry between the teams, proper football club, right? Proper fans. And that's how it goes. You know, it's a cyclical thing. And, you know, I've had my rant about the oil money clubs, and I'd rather they were wiped off the face of the earth. But it's healthy for the sport when, you know, you get to see different teams winning it and different fans getting to experience joy. Mm. And you have to have the heartache and the anxiety and the bitter disappointment that goes with it. Otherwise, you know, if it's a diet of nothing but victory and success, then it ends up becoming tasteless. I don't know. I've kind of stretched that metaphor a bit, but yeah, I think it's that's what we love about competitive sports, isn't it? So that being said, I'm totally prepared for Arsenal to lay down a dynasty and completely dominate the sport over the next 20 years. So get ready for that.
Right.
I'm reserving the right to change my opinion on this.
That's fair. Look, you've earned it. Right now, you could say anything and just pump your chest and say ridiculous things of, we're going to win the league 10 years straight. Okay. Right now, you can ride that euphoria wave and you've earned that right. It feels like you've earned that right. So good on you.
I will not be silenced.
No, nor should you. And I think you owe your class with a highlight package. You need to, you know, show the highlights of the year, right?
I made a cake, Damon. I got a cake. So at supermarket Asda, there's this little machine where you can upload a image and then they'll print it onto a cake for you.
Okay.
So I just done a picture of myself in an Arsenal kit, riding Gunnosaurus, cannon in one hand, Premier League trophy in the other, Abraham on the back of my shirt, the middle of Emirates Stadium with Arsenal Premier League champion. So I've been promising my class all year that we'd have a party if we won the league. So if they don't piss me off too much tomorrow morning, then we'll have a little party at the end of the day.
Oh, I love it.
Have some cake and enjoy the moment.
Can you send me pictures? I would love to see it. I would love to see that. If I mean, you don't have to put any kids in the picture or blur them out, you know, for safety purposes. But yes, I would love to see that. It would be awesome. All right. There you
go. I'll send you a picture of it. I'll send you an image on WhatsApp of what has gone on the cake. But let's not talk about it now. You can just have a look at it and enjoy that picture.
All right, you sent it? Oh my, that's the one that's going on the cake. Holy shit. Wow. There is a lot going on here. That cake is going to be fucking incredible. There's fireworks. It's a packed stadium. What's the mascot's name?
Gunnosaurus.
Gunnosaurus is behind a cannon, firing a soccer ball, a football, if you will. Joe riding said, with a big cheer, holding the trophy, blasting a ball in net.
All hand drawn by me.
Oh, definitely. Sure. Yeah. I love it. Who's that? Is that United?
Like I said, there's a boy in my class who supports Man United, so I had to just put a United goalkeeper in there. Just a little fuck you. He can eat that bit of it.
you're building toughness. That's what you're doing. You're building. You're sandpapering. Perfect. You got a banner.
Hard times build strong men, Damon.
He'll
take me when he's older.
Exactly. Look at this. Look, the detail to this. We got the sock. You see the socks. Yeah, even a little arson there. The banners hanging, the signage in the stadium, fireworks everywhere, flags, and Joel looking very muscular, may I add.
What do you mean? I definitely look like that in real life. I resent what you're implying.
What? It's a fantastic. Your legs just look, oh my God, you look like you'd be in the best of the Super Juniors, for crying out loud. Yeah, you look ripped, looking good. They AI treated you well. they good.
How dare you?
I'm just saying, you know, it looks fantastic. Yeah, that'll be great. I need a shot of that. I need a shot of that cake. It'll be fucking awesome, actually. Good for you. Love it. Ride it out, my man. Ride it. Yeah, honestly, that fucking picture, that should be hanging in your fucking bedroom right now. That thing's a work of art. Is it your computer wallpaper?
No, it should be though.
It sure should. A few copies. It's gonna be mine. Those legs, I'm gonna be jacking off to that thing. Meaty thighs, love it. All right, you're the boss. Take us where you want to take us.
Well, we're in the middle of Best of Super Genius season, and Patreon subscribers will have received three audio updates. So I've committed to doing nightly audio for this tour.
Yeah.
So there's shows for night one, night two, night three. You can catch up on those. So we're not going to be talking about night one and night two and night three because no one wants to sit here on Thursday, the 21st of May, and listen to us talking about what happened on night one or night two or night three. That's old news. So we're just going to talk about night four, Damon, if that's okay with you.
I love it.
What have you just sort of general thoughts on the tournament so far? Because it's the same as always, really, in as much as it's fun to watch and I enjoy the shows where there's sort of 9-10 matches on the card. They're like little variety packs, a little smorgasbord of all different things. And they're well-paced and generally I'd say it's, again, as usual, it's a high floor, low ceiling kind of deal where nothing is bad. Mm-hmm. Everything, I think, has got a pretty solid baseline. Even the stuff that I sort of annoys me a bit, it's not bad. It's not terrible wrestling. It's just, you know, maybe not quite to my taste. And the high-end stuff, that I've not seen anything that I think is going to be making a match of the year list, but there's still some pretty fucking good matches that have got me hyped up and excited.
Yeah. Yeah. The one thing that I do like about Best of the Super Junior that I think stands out more in this tournament than, say, like New Japan Cup or G1 or anything like that, is it does feel like even within the junior ranks, there's a myriad of different styles from match to match. And that I do enjoy. Like, I do enjoy the fact that there's, you know, some grimy deathmatch elements in some matches. There's quick surprise pins. There's even, dare I say, some submission stuff. And then, you know, you have like severe, we're leaning hard on lucha style. And then we have, you know, your what you would normally think of, and maybe that's wrong to say, but, you know, when you think Best of the Super Juniors, there's that New Japan kind of hard-hitting, fast-paced, action-packed, high-spotty junior-style wrestling, too. You're right. Nothing has been bad. Nothing has been where I've been like, oh, God. Let me take that back. There's been stuff where I've been like, you know. I mean, if you know, we'll talk about it, obviously. But, you know, Yo against Sho. It would, you know, I was like, okay. We could do without some of the elements, but okay, the normal fucking shit like that, that you would expect. But that being said, main events have been very good. In fact, really fucking good. So everybody, when they have that spotlight, has shined. And I can't sit here and be like, well, you know, even individual performers, I've been really happy with. Like, everybody's had, I don't want to say nights off, right? But, like, if you're going 3 minutes against Kushida, if you're doing 4 minutes, if you're doing 3 minutes with Taguchi, you know what I mean? Like, people might argue, and people in the ring might argue, but to me, there's a big difference between those 3 minutes and 18 minutes in a fucking main event where you're asked to really bust ass and carry the load here. But even those short matches are good. Again, are they world beaters? Are they things you're going to put on a fucking compilation video? No. But nothing's disgusting. Nothing's like, oh my God, what are we watching? It's all good. It's just, I guess the best part is probably what I opened with, is that there's a little something for everybody. And you're going to get little tastes of it on each individual night. And I think that's a good thing. And depending upon where it is in the card, is depending upon how much of the fucking platter are you getting of that style. And I like that. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, I think some tournaments it does get to be a bit of a grind. You know, I'm sure we'll have the dog days of this tournament too, but I think the wrestlers have been aware enough of the nature of these cards and mix things up a bit, so we're not seeing like the same shit over and over again. So I've found it quite breezy to watch. I'm enjoying it so far. So there's a lot to be said for that. So we're going to be talking about yesterday's show, which was Wednesday, May 20th at Corakun Hall. 1,257. So I guess that's a sellout, or close to a sellout. It's a pretty healthy number there. Mm-hmm. And we opened with the B block tournament match where we had Jacob Boston Young, who was 0-3, so pointless going into this contest, against Kushida, who was 1-2. And we had Jacob Boston Young winning the match 3 minutes and 3 seconds via Bites the Dust. So you know me, like, I've got my little story with Jacob Boston Young, the guy I've been following since 2018 when he was in Oriental Wrestling Entertainment. He's my guy. You know, you pick your guy and you follow them. And now seeing him go from those random shows that not many people watched in Chongqing, China, now getting singles win, getting a singles win over Kushida in Best of the Super Junior. Fuck me, Damon. Imagine if someone had said that to me when I was watching that in 2018. Yeah. Thinking where Kushida was, where, you know, admittedly he wasn't at the peak of the division, was he? I mean, he was still pretty up there in 2018, wasn't he?
Sure, yeah.
And if someone had said to me while I was watching these shows on YouTube that Jay Cafe was going to be beating Kushida in Best of the Super Juniors, I would have probably had you committed to the funny farm. So I just thought that was a really cool moment, him getting his first ever Best of the Super Juniors victory. And I'll bet he was absolutely thrilled to do it against a guy like Kushida, who he studied under in the academy. And you know, I know Kushida isn't exactly a push commodity anymore, but I still think it's a really cool thing to have under your belt. And he might well have gone 0-9. Jacob Austin Young, I'm talking about. He might well have gone 0-9 at the tournament. And I don't think many people would have batted an eye, because that's just how he's been positioned within his faction. And I'm not saying this is the genesis of a mega push or anything, but it means something. You know, win over Kushida still means something, or it means something to me anyway, and I'm sure it meant something to him. And you could hear the crowd was surprised by it. There was a reaction there, and I think it's a sure faith from the company in the value that Jacob is bringing to the company. And I think he's carving himself a nice little spot as, and I hope I'm not damning him with faint praise here, because I genuinely mean this as a compliment, but like a reliable lower mid-card junior heel. Mm-hmm. And that's cool to me. His heel work is good. Just the little things, the little touches, like him teasing the chair spot, like he's going to throw Kushida into the chairs and the crowd like, oh, and then he just throws him back in the ring. It's like, ah, fuck you, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
I like that. I think he's getting comfortable with the character, and I think he sells well. He's a good base. He's reliable. He's always in the right place at the right time. And yeah, again, I don't mean this in an unkind way, but every good roster needs people like Jacob Austin Young. This was a solidly worked opener. There was good face heel dynamics, get the crowd invested. I think what United Empire are doing with Zane Jay, and the kind of interference he's doing, that, you know, that needs to, you're threading a needle there so it doesn't go full House of Torture. I think it's okay at the moment. I think it's good. It's subtle enough to be different to House of Torture, where the interference is more of like a cleverly timed distraction than a full-blown assault, like a clown car of people just like beating people up ringside. But, you know, it was a moment where Zane Jay just threw Kushida just slightly off his game, so he took his eye off the ball, and then Jacob Austin Young was able to capitalize that and just hit him hard, put him away in a manner that I think made him look cunning and ruthless, rather than like a cartoonish cowardly heel, whilst also protecting Kushida somewhat. So I do, you know, for a 3 minute, I've said quite a lot given that it's a 3 minute opening match, but I do think those are points worth discussing. So yeah. Jacob Austin Young 1-3, Kushida also 1-3.
Yep. And here's the thing too, I know people are going to complain about, wow, my god, opening match, all this interference and all, but I kind of liked it in the sense of, like, Jacob Austin Young needed a win, wanted a win, and they made sure that he was going to win. Like, I kind of like that story being told. I kind of like that element of he's going to get this win, whether hook or by crook. And I know that Kushida in recent years on this show has probably taken a little bit more slack than he deserves. Because what, like, even like in tournaments like this, and in situations like this, he just shines. Like, I know there was a lot of talk when he left WWE. And even before, like when he was with New Japan, like, what are you going to do with him? Turn him heel. How do you turn Kushida heel? You know what I mean? Like, to me, he is the incredibly most, he's like Ricky Steamboat. Like, how do you turn him heel? And nor would I want that. Like, I just think he's such a fucking, even to this day, like, he's just tremendous. And his body of work is unbelievable. And I'm not saying that he's the same guy that he was, you know, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, 8 years ago. No. But, man, just what a fucking stud he is. Consistent stud. Again, I know we're fawning over a 3 minute match with a fuck ton of interference, but I don't know. I was okay with everything. I did giggle that fucking Kushida didn't have a moment to take off his jacket. He wrestled the whole fucking match. He's in that puffy vest of his. I thought that was kind of silly, but again,
I was wondering, like, does that cushion him somewhat from the big bumps? Like, when he does the big dive to the outside, is he like, yeah, I'm going to keep my big puffy jacket on for this one?
Right, bounce right back up. Yeah, again, we're fawning over a 3 minute match, but I thought, like to me, it, not only did it set a tone a little bit for the other guys, it felt like it kind of set the tone for the idea of, okay, this is where Jacob Austin Young kind of gets moving a little bit. I just felt like it was a nice setup for future things to come. I dug it.
legitimize him somewhat and set the precedent that, you know, he could, I'm not going to say he could beat, anyone. Yeah. Why not?
Why not? I mean, look, I think
believe that. Otherwise, what's the point in him being there?
Right. And here's the thing, too. You know, you look at the standings right now. There's a lot of guys that you wouldn't expect with fucking 2 points, you know, and he's one of them. You know, he's got 2 points. He's right in the mix. Robbie Eagles, 2 points. Kushida, 2 points. Acura, 2 points. You know, like, it's we all know that things will change dramatically by the time we get to the finals. So, all right.
All right, second match then was the A block with Jun Kasai, who is 1-1, facing Daikin, a guy who is 0-3. And Jun Kasai, winner after 4 minutes, 46 seconds.
Smart guy.
Going Guin G my way, the finishing move is called here, according to the website. So, Daikin, a guy, he's just running with this early formula for getting the crowd fired up, where he does his, you know, big drop kick and big dive just to get everyone on board, which is just good work. That's smart work. And I thought Jun Kasai was selling pretty generously for a guy who's, you know, effectively a quasi young lion. You know, I don't know if Daikin, a guy, will pick up any points in this tournament. I hope he does. And again, I hope that's going to be a good moment and well executed when it does. But I don't think it was Kasai's best work here. I mean, he's had much more entertaining matches in this tournament. I absolutely fucking love the Fujita match. That was wonderful. But he eschewed the deathmatch accoutrements here. They just had a wrestling match and it was okay. I thought the finish was a bit sloppy. I could see shoulders off the mat. So yeah, this wasn't his best work, but...
Joe, what do you mean? He held them down for a 20 count, for crying out loud. The shoulders were down somewhere in there in that stretch for 3 seconds.
Yeah, this was fine. Again, it's not, if you can't take this match as a snapshot for the value Jun Kasai has brought to the best of Super Juniors, because I've absolutely fucking loved the guy so far. He's so charismatic, and I think he's an underrated comedy as well. Like, he's not a comedic wrestler, but there's just some stuff that he does. It just makes me crack up laughing. Like the spot with the syringes a couple of nights ago, where he gets them out and everyone's like, "Oh my god, what are you gonna do?" Then he just jams them in his own head, and you're like, "This guy's an absolute lunatic." Mikey says, "What would we have to give for Jun Kasai just to win the whole thing or the junior title? A quiet taste for some, but he feels like an absolute superstar." He does have like jump off the screen charisma, doesn't he? And I was a bit skeptical about how it would fit in Best of the Super Juniors, but I'm loving it so far.
Now, if you're a pro wrestling fan in Japan, you know him. You know who he is. Like every time I see him, though, I'm always like, does he go to the market and buy like bananas? You know what I mean? What's the everyday life like? I just can't picture him like just sitting doing laundry. You know what I mean?
Filing his tax returns.
Right. What is the everyday life for Jun Kasai? Again, he brings an element that's certainly not there with anyone else. Maybe Despy, you know, when he gets goofy. I like it. I really do. And again, the story of this match was really quite simple, you know, where I think they even mentioned it on commentary, where the guy is like maybe a few months older than, Kasai's own child. And he can't go home and say, "I lost to a guy that, you know, is my son's age." And that really is what it was. I felt like it was a guy with a ton of experience who's been there, been in that building, you know, countless fucking times, going against a young, fired up, fiery, you know, pseudo young lion. And he didn't have to beat him over the head with a fucking 2x4. And he didn't have to throw him into an exploding barbed wire, glass, light tube shit. He's just going to outsmart him because he's been there, done that. And yeah, he's just going to use his wits about him. He kind of, you know, did his little knee injury spot and, you know, milked that for all it's worth. And then, boop, ran the ropes, big clothesline. And then we went home and pinned him for a 20 count. It's pretty wild.
Yeah. Do you think Daikin goes in to pick up points in this tournament?
You know, the way that the commentary was going about how it's, you know, he's, it's unlikely that he will, and blah, blah, blah. And it kind of made me think, well, okay, somebody's going to fucking lose to him, it looks like. Will he get points? It's going to be a tough road. He might get zero. Here's the thing, though. Nobody's expecting him to get one. And I think that if they do give him one, it'll be big. Like, people will eat it up like it's like an Arsenal win. I'm just looking at the roster. Like, I don't know who would that person be. Like, who's he wrestled so far? Let me see. I can't find it. I don't feel like looking for it. I feel like I'm gonna break it.
He wrestled Taguchi. He wrestled.
He hasn't wrestled Nick Wayne yet.
Titan.
Yeah.
And he also wrestled Valiente.
Yeah. Because I would have said Taguchi might be on that list. I think if he's going to get a win, it's going to be Nick Wayne. Because I just can't see anyone else. Maybe Jacob Austin Young? Maybe? But I can't even see that. I think, like, pecking order-wise, that would be weird.
Probably. I've not really got a sense of the block separations at this point, because it's been all
double-block
shows. So I'm not really sure who's in each other's blocks.
The guys in the same block as Nick Wayne and Taguchi. Block A. Block A also has Jacob. No, but that's Block B, Jacob Austin Young. So fuck me on that one. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, it could be Nick Wayne. Could Watto? Be Acura, Watto. No,
I can't see
that. Fujita, Robbie
see
X.
Can't see that.
Yeah, he's wrestled most of the people that you think he might have a chance of getting points. But to be honest, I mean, I think that's kind of overblown. I think the success criteria for him in this tournament, for me anyway, is not whether or not he picks up points or how many points he picks up, but more about the performances. But, you know, that's also limited somewhat in what he's allowed to do, because, you know, if you're given a four-minute match, second match on the show, there's not a huge amount you can do there. But again, I'm not looking at him expecting him to be delivering match of the year candidates and blowing everyone away. It's just about getting the reps in, isn't it? And having the experience working with a wide range of different opponents, and you're just looking for those little incremental steps and growth throughout the tour. You might not even see it within the tour. I don't know. It's difficult to microanalyze something that you've got such a small sample size of.
Yeah, I think he might go over, and that's okay. And like I said, if he does get it, maybe it's Nick Wayne, but I don't even see that. Like, he could very well wind up with nothing. So, yeah, but it's about the experience for him. Absolutely.
All right, then. So we move on to match three, which was in the B block. Yoshinobu Kanemaru, who is 1-1, facing Robbie Eagles, who is 1-2. And Kanemaru got a, let's say, a somewhat surprise win, 6 minutes, 42 seconds by Hurricanrana pin. So this was a really interesting match too. I think that a great in-ring story of, I thought it was essentially misdirection, really, where they're having, you know, a classic pros pro match, just two veterans doing what they do best with technique and precision and psychology. They're working each other's knees and all that. That was really good. Then the ref bump happens and you're waiting for the whiskey spot, but it just never comes. So instead we got a really creative spot with a springboard knee to the mummy daddy area and a surprise Hurricanrana pin, which I didn't see coming, and I wouldn't have minded this going on a little bit longer. And I think these are two wrestlers who have such great instincts and great minds for the business. And Kanemaru especially is just really interesting to me in a format like Best of the Super Juniors, where there aren't the usual expectations or restrictions that come with certain spots on the card. Like, if you've got Kanemaru in an undercard 8-man tag match on a Road 2 show, you know what he's going to do, if anything, if he even bothers to tag in. If you have him challenging for the junior tag belts or the junior singles title in a, you know, like a main event at Korakuen Hall, you know what you're going to get. But in a tournament like Best of the Super Juniors, in these 10-match cards, a Kanemaru match is a really delightful box of chocolate situation where you've no idea what you're going to getting it. It keeps you on your toes, doesn't it?
Yeah. Robbie Eagles is so good, too. Like silly good. I may be enjoying his matches the most so far. I thought his match with Despy was really good, too. Yeah, he's both those guys are just studs. And here's the thing with Kanemaru, right? It's throughout the calendar year, there are plenty of times where you could hand wave him and just be like, all right, you know, it's a row two show and yeah, multi-man tag and okay, you know what you're getting. You're exactly right. It's these little moments. Again, this is the third match on the fucking show. So even though there's, you know, I feel like there's incredible talent in the ring, it's the third match on the show. And I don't think anybody's expecting them to go over 10 minutes, right? Let alone 15 to really drive it home of how great both these guys are. 6 minutes, and they made the most of it. And I'm sorry, like in a tournament that has a ton of talent. I don't know, man. Robbie Eagles feels like the most underrated fucking guy in the world. I don't know. And here's the thing. I don't think he's that underrated with people who watch this. Like, I don't. I just feel like, I don't know. He's just knows the situation. He knows the situation every time he goes out there. And he knows what he needs to do in the sense of, okay, I need to get this guy over. I need to get this particular thing over. I need, during this match, I need to, you know, sell my leg. Or like, and he does everything. Again, name me a bad Robbie Eagles match. Like, name me one match that's like, nah, it wasn't good. Again, are all of them fucking mind-blowing, take your pants off and fucking, you know, just, you know, boner sit? No. But man, like, Know who he reminds me of. He reminds me of a guy like, again, different style, mind you, but very similar in the sense of just like a Bobby Fulton or even like a Bobby Eaton or like, you know, guys like that. Like just really fucking, like I'm guaranteeing you if there is a time capsule or a time machine rather, and we could go back in time, I'm telling you, we could drop him into any one of those babyface tag teams and even heel tag teams, but any one of those 80s babyface tag teams, and he would fit in like a fucking glove. He would fit in like a fucking glove. Like maybe that's what I appreciate most about him. Like for all his modern and current and today pro wrestling that he does the basics so well. He could fit in that era and just fucking thrive. He's really good.
Do you want to kiss him, Damon? Do you want to marry him?
I do. I want to marry him. I want to marry Robbie Eagles and his new look, his AFL look. He looks like a
fucking mouse. Well, if you've quite finished wanking him off, we'll move on to the next.
Oh, please.
He's good. We love him as well. Yes. That's Kanemaru on. So he's 2-1. Kanemaru's got a winning record. Robbie Eagles, 1-3, and then we move on to the fourth match, which is in the A block as Nick Wayne, who was on, who was 1-2 against the unbeaten Taguchi. Taguchi was going into this 3-0, but Nick Wayne gets the win after 2:52 via Wayne's World. I don't know, man. It says something that Nick Wayne has got his best responses from the crowd on the entire tour by copying Taguchi spots, which he did through most of this match. I mean, there was nothing to see here. I suspect just perhaps a match to help Taguchi manage the workload and take it easy when, you know, you're only wrestling for 2:52. Nick Wayne, I see the talent and I can see why people are excited about him.
20 years old.
Repeat a couple of points I've made from the Patreon audio. Reminds me a lot of 2018 Will Ospreay. So obviously he's a guy who emulates Will Ospreay a lot. He just annoys me. I find him quite irritating. It's the theater kid thing. Yeah. It's his arms, Damon. He is constantly waving his arms around. Stop waving your arms around. What are you grasping at? Just do something up. Figure out figure out what to do with your arms, Nick Wayne. That's holding you back from being an elite wrestler. Once he's got the arms figured out, then he's just onto a winner. But yeah, I mean, I can see why people like him. He's good. He's good, talented guy. I'm sure he's going to have a great career.
Yep,
I can see like him being like a big star in US wrestling in the next 5 years or so.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if big is the word, but I mean, you know, he's on fucking TV apparently on AEW, Ring of Honor as well. He's 20 years old. Like he's still growing for crying out loud. He's still learning. He's learning how to be an adult for crying out loud, let alone a great pro wrestler. And I think there's an absolute foundation there. Is he an awkward 20-year-old? Maybe. I don't know. Maybe he's doing things that he doesn't even believe he can do. I think there's a ton of fucking talent there. Like a ton. I don't think this Nick Wayne that we see here today is going to be the same one that we see in 3 years. We're in 5 years.
Oh, of course not. Of course. Right. It'll be unrecognizable, I'm sure.
Right. And I think the foundation is there. And to me, that's a hell of a compliment. You know, if we're talking about, you know, Will when he was 20 years old, you know, I think there's plenty there. Does he feel generic in the sense of he feels like every guy trying to break into a major promote, you know what I mean? In this day and like, he just has that same kind of aura about him. But he'll find it. I think that'll take time. He'll grow into it. And again, I just keep leaning on. He's 20 fucking years old. 20 years old. So I think there's plenty there. Plenty of growth. Plenty where he can find his groove and find what to do with his fucking arms. but yeah, like that'll come in time. I really do. And what a great opportunity that he has to be. This is, you know, again, for a 20-year-old, oh, he's, you know, living the life. Good for him. Good for him. And it'll only get better.
So then this is the fourth match, which was the B block. Taiji Ishimori, who is 1-2, faces Daisuke Sasaki, who also was unbeaten, was 3-0 going into this one. And Ishimori got the win, 11 minutes, 36 seconds via ghetto clutch. I'm still not quite sure what I think about Daisuke Sasaki.
Thank you for saying
I understand.
Thank you.
He is there for like the proper pro-res, puro freaks. I can see that he's working hard. I'm not faulting the effort. And apparently, you know, according to people who know this kind of stuff, he is working a lot harder than he usually works in DDT. And I can kind of see the appeal as this like lovable scummer with a bit of techers. You know, I suppose not dissimilar to a Kanemaru. I thought this was quite a fun match. Like the story of them mirroring each other's techniques. It was like anything you can do, I can do better kind of match. And that had a good sense of escalation where, you know, Ishimori was finally able to out-scum the scummer. So yeah, I quite enjoyed this one. That put Sasaki 3-1, Ishimori 2-2. But yeah, well, I'm curious what you think about Sasaki. There's a question from Evil Trident that said, is Daisuke Sasaki a more enjoyable to watch heel wrestler than House of Torture Show or Doki? So yeah, what do you think of him so far?
I would say yes to that, to answer that question. But I'm glad that you said what you said, because that's the same vibe I have right now. Like, I don't know where he lands for me. Like is he a guy that I don't know, knows he doesn't belong there? But again, in a kayfabe sense. So he is going to just kind of muck it up a little bit. I don't know. Like, I'm not hating it. I'm not hating his matches. I just don't know if I'm into them. Does that make any sense? Like, I just kind of feel like he's a guy filling a role as opposed to a guy that, oh, let me make sure I fucking watch this. I think he's been fine.
He's not raising the ceiling, is he?
No, right. And, you know, like, we're a quarter of the way through here. So I kind of don't want to make harsh judgments too soon. But he hasn't really done anything for me anyway to stand out. He hasn't really done anything for me to say, yeah, let's invite him back. But in the same breath, like, he hasn't been like, oh, instant fast forward. He's just been a placeholder is maybe not the right word, but he's a guy that's like, I haven't seen anything to get too excited about yet.
Yeah, like, his work is good, but it's no better than any of the other guys on the field. And the charisma, I don't quite get it yet.
Yeah.
I just don't get it. Maybe it'll come. I don't know. But someone tell me what I'm missing with Daisuke Sasaki, because I see and read people like really enjoying his stuff, and it's not bad at all, but...
Right. That's sticking.
I don't know what it, yeah.
I'm with him.
All right. Sixth match, A Block tournament match. We've got Titan, who was 3-0 unbeaten, going against Valiente Jr., who's 1-1. And we had a 7:44 match where Titan was the winner after Gideon won 21. And this was cool. We just got like a sick little lucha match here. Again, like the point I was making earlier about this tour being like a little variety packer, where here we've got the two TMLL guys wrestling each other. I'm glad Valiente seems to be okay. So the injury he had, I don't know when it happened. I mean, certainly they presented it as if he had injured himself against Taguchi. I don't know if the injury had happened beforehand and they kind of kayfabed that a bit with the Taguchi match, but didn't seem to be an issue here. I wondered if it was going to be one of those matches where Titan, as his CMLL brethren, was going to, you know, go all out with the intention of making Valiente look like a star. He kind of did for parts of the match, because Titan started off doing his cool lucha shit, and then Valiente did cooler lucha shit, but then Titan locked in the submission and Valiente, like, he nearly fought out of it, and I thought it was going to go a bit longer, but, you know, he showed sort of some level of heart and determination to last as long as he did, but then he tapped out and I was like, oh, okay, I thought there's going to be a bit more to it, but yes, yeah, it's pretty good. So Titan still unbeaten, 4-0, Valiente 1-2.
Look, Titan looks like a fucking stud every year.
He's so good.
He really is. And I, you know, a silly comment here, but Joel, that fucking mask he had might be one of my favorite masks I've ever seen on any pro wrestler. It was so fucking awesome. Like, the different colored, for lack of a better, like, what, bedazzledness, I don't know what it is, what it's called. But yeah, it was so fucking cool. He just looks the part. And every time he's brought in, we always want to kind of typecast him into, yep, he'll be middle of the pack and blah, blah, blah. But every year he does better than that. You know, he's always in the mix. He's so good. Again, logistics being what they are, it'd be impossible for him to have any type of like super long-term commitment. But every time he shows, he fucking delivers. He's a huge talent. And again, this is what? It wasn't even 10 minutes, right? But again, you got a nice taste of it. Like him in a main event light is going to be awesome. It's just incredible.
Well, you mentioned that timing point. Why is it Ishimori and Sasaki get 12 minutes, but Titan and Valiente get 7 minutes? That annoys me a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, maybe because they're not full-time New Japan guys. I don't know. Yeah, I would have loved to. Like, if there's any match on the show that I wish went longer, it's probably that one. Yeah, Titan's awesome. I'm sorry. He's one guy that I wish we could poach. I really wish. And it is a blessing when he's here, because he fucking delivers all the time.
Yeah. I mean, I've just realized I've just missed the obvious point here, which was Valiente's got this knee injury, so the submission was sort of worked around that. So, of course, he tapped
good
out.
Point.
But right. Yeah, I mean, maybe the shorter match time was to cover for the fact that maybe he couldn't work longer. Maybe he's still good recovering point. From that. I know it's a sort of day-to-day kind of thing. But there we go. We move on to the seventh match, which was in the B block, where El Desperado, who was 1-2, faced off against Hio, who is 1-1. 12 minutes, 16 seconds, Despi got the win after Numero Dos. And the pre-match stuff, I got flashbacks to when Despi himself returned from excursion against, he wasn't wrestling Ibushi, but was it Wrestle Kingdom? After the match, he came out and gave a rose to Ibushi, if I'm remembering that correctly. So I kind of got echoes of that with Hyo giving the rose to Despi. And I've heard a lot of criticism of Hyo, and a lot of his early matches, I think, were very gimmicky and silly. But I think today, he showed a fair bit of substance to go with that style. And similar to the last match, the story was him getting a beating from a veteran who smashed his knee up with a chair and then cranked up the pain until he couldn't take any more. So it's a match clearly designed to elicit sympathy and build a connection with the fans. So I'm starting to see, I'm seeing a lot of upside with Hyo. He's absolutely gorgeous, like the most conventionally attractive man I think I've ever seen. He's flashy, he's fun.
Kiss him?
Yes, I do. I would. Yeah, Hyo, if you're listening, I'll do it. I'll take on a husband. And he knows his audience. I thought he worked really well from underneath here. I thought he sold well. The crowd were into his potential comeback spots, even though the comeback didn't fully happen. So I would say I think Dragon Gate have got a good one on their hands. There's definitely a guy I could imagine the New Japan office wanting to take another look at. And he seems very marketable to me.
That I agree with. And I think he adds, again, it might not be for everybody, right? But he does add a different element. Now, again, one could argue that, the dream match with Hyo and all that, some people might hand wave that and be like, oh, what is this? And other people might be like, this is great, pro wrestling, funny, blah, 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 blah. Plus, hard, I think you said it last week, with the, he's a DDT guy. And yes, he leans into that. And yes, that makes him different and makes him stand out. Is he my cup of tea? No, probably not. Probably not. Like it's just not, I'm not going to go run out and, order the DDT streaming service if they even have one at this point. But he's fine. He's fine. I take that back. He's better than fine. Again, is he for me? No. That doesn't mean he's not good. And he's not good at what he does. 12 minutes? Did they go 13 minutes?
Yeah, 12.
Okay. I don't know. Maybe I take back what I said earlier and say, well, or no, better yet. No, let's not take back. Let's shave off half of that and give that to Teton. that would have been fine, but I get it. I get it. It's a pro wrestling's a mixed bag. It's something for everybody. There you go. That's positive. That's positive, Damon, right there.
Yeah. So Despi's 2-2, Hyo 1-2. So then the eighth match was the A block, where we had Master Watto, who's 1-2, against Akira, who's also 1-2. Master Watto picked up the win here, 11 minutes 9 seconds after the Sutenkaku German suplex. I'm finding myself in this tour getting, not just this tour, but sort of in recent months, getting a bit frustrated with Master Watto, who I think has got a lot of talent and a lot of opportunities, but I think is under-delivering. I think I need someone to beat the shit out of him. And I don't mean like in a wrestling match, like a heel working him over. I mean like a proper Shibata style head in the fridge cranial assault.
Okay.
I want to see what he's made of, Damon. I want to see how bad he really wants this.
He doesn't want to show you that.
You know, we've got this new generation where some guys are rising to the occasion and grabbing that brass ring. Master Watto, pull your finger out, son, or you're going to be Junior Great Okan if you're not there already. I can't argue against that at this point. Look, there are half a dozen guys, maybe more in this tournament, who want this more than he does. And they will eat his lunch. And they're in the process of eating his lunch. They've opened his lunchbox and they are tucking into his sandwiches as we speak. And he's not doing anything about it, like Frankie Akira here. Now, I did quite like this match, actually, because it was basically Akira just beating up Watto for the entire match until Watto landed the big fuck off Sutenkaku, which looked incredible. Like the camera angle was primed, that like perfect POV, and Akira just fucking launched himself into that shit. So I was clapping like a seal for the finish. But I need to see something from Watto. I'm looking at this Osaka show where he's in the main event against Fujita. If he cannot give me something really, really good, then I'm jumping off the Watto Mania bandwagon, if there's anyone still left on it.
And there shouldn't be. Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I was going to ask you legit that very question of, has he shown you anything? Has he given you anything? Like, is anybody hanging their hat on Master Watto at this point? Look, he does. Here's the thing, Joel. Everything that you said, everything that you're wanting, everything that you kind of think we need, he's not going to give you. Like, that's not him. He's just not. And
he's not got that dog in him.
No. And again, that's not even from a you know, give me energy in the match kind of, you know, pro wrestling kind of thing. Like, it's just like, he's content. He's happy to be where he is. And if he's not, then, you know, he's shown nothing to prove otherwise. Like, he is a guy that is there. Just there. And you're right. Like, there is going to be a ton, Joel, of, okay, is this the fucking final straw? Like, is this going to be the match coming up in Osaka that makes or breaks it? Because if he can't have that type of match with Fujita, then what's the point? Like, what are we doing? You know, like main event, they're going to get time. You're in there with a guy who has the passion, has the heart, has the, like, trust me, there have been plenty of situations and stories that we have heard where he has turned down situations to make him be, to elevate him, because he felt like, no, not yet. I'm not ready for that. I need to prove myself even further. So, like, if Watto can't do it here, then I want that ship to be sunk. Like that ship has so many fucking holes in it. It's really based off of what could be and what people want more than what things are and what they have been. Like, look, seriously, some people just don't have it. And he doesn't have it. He doesn't have the dog.
No, can't argue with that. Ninth match, also the Watto's 2-2, Akira's 1-3. Does anyone care about the points at this point? I think maybe it's a bit too early to be looking at points, but I've included them anyway. So
there you go.
Ninth match, we had the B block where Yo, who's 2-1 against Unbeaten Show, who's 3-0 going into this, and Yo picked up the win 30 minutes, 22 seconds via disqualification, where he pretended that he'd been attacked with a wrench. Damon, I'm having a great week.
Yeah.
I'm floating on cloud nine, just loving life. Then I saw this match pop up and I saw the file clocking in at 20 minutes. I was immediately consumed by an all-encompassing sense of doom.
Oh.
So crack this one on a triple speed and just locked in for it. Now, we all know this is deeply unserious wrestling, so I am grading it on a curve somewhat, but I will say, in its defense, at least it wasn't the usual House of Torture slop. They came up with some creative and silly slash fun spots that absolutely belong on a DDT show rather than the semi-main event of a Koraku and Best of the Super Junior show. But I begrudgingly enjoyed this slightly more than I thought I would. It's still bad, but it's not as complete. I was expecting utter shit, and instead I got a little bit of ha-has that I kind of smirked at.
Why are there ha-has? Like, why are there ha-has?
I know there shouldn't be. I'm saying there shouldn't be. It's not appropriate for the spot. I agree with you, yes.
Like, this is
not...
I
don't mind Yo if he stays in his lane. Just don't try to periodically pretend that he's a serious wrestler. But again, this is not appropriate for the spot it was given.
B, wouldn't you think again, the history of Yo and Sho. Again, we have to go back many years, mind you, but let's just pretend that they were friends and partners, and they traveled the world together, and they, were shoulder to shoulder during excursion, and it was just a goofy match with very little intensity, very little grit that you would think, okay, these guys, somebody felt fucked over here. And it was that kind of silly, I have a foreign object. Oh, I'm going to hit somebody with it. Okay, I'm going to miss. And then the other person's going to get said object. And he's going to pretend that he was hit and, you know, pass out in the ring. And then the other guy will get disqualified because, oh, he's so smart. Like, one, we've seen this 250 million times, right? So the creativity of it.
A post-wrestling review of the match.
Yeah, it was like, what are we doing? Like, why these two doing this? And again, I understand that their referees are there to absorb the heat, to make a call in the ring, to maybe even rile people up, or to make people be like, "Hey, he finally got his due," and blah blah blah. The entire night has been filled with different various forms of interference and outside the ring brawling and everything, and. I don't know, like that, like, I don't know. I just felt like that we're disqualifying him for that. Like, we had a whole match with this. It seemed a bit preposterous. And again, the the idea of Yo and Sho in a match, semi-main event, going close to 15, was it? 13 minutes, 14 minutes? You would think that there would be some grit and sandpaper. There was none. It really didn't feel like there was any. And I'm sorry.
I didn't think there'd be any grit and sandpaper.
No?
I know what these two are. I know what they are at this point.
Well, that's true, too. I mean, Sho is just, you know, he's playing this character. Great. Yo, on the other hand, I'm being dead serious. What do people see in him? Like, we talked about Master Wato. What do people see in Yo? Like, he's quirky, he's cute, he's kind of like boy bandish a little bit, and he's got...
Yeah, he leans into the Fujoshi feminine stuff as well.
Right, yeah. Right. Like, I get it. Okay, fine. Is that what people are hitching their wagon to, though? Like, to get behind? Ugh. The fucking annoying with his faces. I don't like him. I don't like him. He stinks. Stinks. He might be one of my least favorite guys. I'm going to be honest with you. He just does nothing for me. In fact,
it's a shame he went in that direction, because he was very talented as a young lion.
He's,
and all the tools to be like a proper wrestler in this company, but...
Just, oh, I'm sorry. Does fucking, like, he, just nothing. Just nothing. Nothing. All right, 13 minutes of that, by the way.
Yeah, but again, you watch it in triple speed. It was only about
that's a good point.
4 minutes. So there you go. I'm laughing. I'm the winner, real winner here. So yeah, both of these guys are on 3-1. So yeah. There we go. We move on to the 10th match, the main event in the A block, where Robbie X, who was 1-2, defeated Kosei Fujita, who came into this 2-1. It was 16 minutes and 57 seconds, and he won via X Express. So we need to have a conversation about Robbie X.
Okay.
Because I think this has gone past the point of, Robbie X, he's doing better than I thought. He's got a nice little connection with the fans. He's good for a junior tag run. Because I think this is something else now. I think this is getting bigger than that. The speed at which he's improving, and a multitude of things, like his selling, his pacing, his striking, his struggling, those little struggle moments in the matches, letting his high spots breathe, his emoting. I think even the smoothness of his transitions was really good in this match. His bumping, like, how about taking that fucking X Express onto Fujita's knees and just having that right level of defiance when he's trying to power through his injuries to some extent. Just the love he is getting from the crowd. These aren't just cheers for him doing cool flips. Like, they actually love this guy. There were significant portions of the Korakuen crowd chanting his name over homegrown, future, nailed-on star Kosei Fujita. And I'm not saying Robbie X is a perfect wrestler. Like, far from it. I think there were parts of this match where the fighting spirit spots were self-indulgent. They're, you know, pretty much no-selling, and I think there's a subtle difference between the two. Robbie's not quite grasped that yet, for my particular and admittedly fussy taste, and his promos need a lot of work. But you listen to this crowd every time Robbie X wrestles in front of them, and I think we need to talk about this, Damon. What have we got here?
Well, I would agree with everything that you said in the sense of we talk about the improvements, but the improvements have been happening for quite a while. And I think we're past that point. Like, we're knee deep in a guy who's fucking really good and is getting recognized for that, which he should. And the promotion sees it as well. Can I say something that might be a little bit off brand for me, but I'm going to throw it your way anyway. First off, I'll start with a question. What do you think he needs? Or does he need anything? Like, what do you think he needs to kind of take a next step, a next level?
I think, I don't know, I'd say sort of maybe.
Because I got to dial it back.
It. Go on, I don't have any really clear thoughts on that. I was going to say sort of dial it back just a little bit. Again, like I said, the kind of moves he was no selling in that fighting spirit. But I was like, hey, right, come on, mate. You've just been like dropped on your head about three times. You can stagger around a little bit, like, you know, try and look a bit glassy eyed. But what are you thinking? Because you've clearly got something to say.
In the ring, he is outstanding. In the ring, he is spectacular, dare I say. And again, only getting better. He looks like a guy. Like, he just, and I think that's where people kind of lose the idea of, okay, he's great in the ring, but what, how can we, like, I just feel like all we need is a bow on the package. Like, it's like getting a great Christmas gift, but it's, you know, wrapped in fucking tinfoil. Like the package.
That's what he looks like, though. I mean,
okay, I'm not saying he needs plastic fucking surgery or he needs to come out and be the fucking second coming of evil with a laser pen. But don't you think he needs something? Like, just a new coat of paint, of something that's a, I don't know if, and again, it might be something as silly as a fucking new pair of tights. Or I don't know. He just needs a more polished, is that the word I'm looking for? Look. I'm not saying that he looks I am saying he looks generic.
He looks very shindy. Yeah. But I don't know, that's kind of his appeal at this point. He's this weird little sort of goblin looking fella.
Okay, but that doesn't work. You know what I mean?
Maybe, like, if, you know? But if he looked like Hyo, would that maybe is part of the appeal that he's a good little funny looking guy?
I'm not saying, again, we don't have to go extreme with it, but yeah, he just needs a fresh coat of paint. And again, that we're not changing style, we're not changing, but I just need an elevation in the presentation of Robbie X, because I feel like that can grow, that can improve, because in the ring, as proven by this match alone, like, he's got the tools, he's got it. We just need to cross the, a lot of pro wrestling is that presentation, and people can live off that fucking presentation for, make a career out of it. And I'm not even saying we need to go that far. Like, just a little fucking glitter, you know what I mean? Like, it's just a little bit of flash, a little bit of fucking, I don't know. I don't. Again, it could be a fucking new pair of tights. I don't know what that is, and he's got to find that within himself. I don't know what that is, but that's what's separating him from. Wow, here we go. People are going to go out of their way to watch Robbie X, as opposed to now of he's a really good wrestler, but. People find holes, and I think it's not the in-ring. It's not anything like that. It's not even the way that he carries himself. It's the presentation. And I can't believe I'm harping on the presentation, but I'm harping on the presentation a little bit. Because I felt that during this match alone of that's what I feel is missing. And it might seem preposterous that's the missing thing, but you'd be surprised how that can be a big factor in, wow, this guy's a star.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's interesting. Then when you think that's the only thing that's stopping him from being a star is just the look. But again, I don't know how much of that you can realistically change. Maybe get on the gas a bit, work on the body. If he has a body like Taiji Ishimori, then maybe we're onto something there. But I think he's been my favorite guy in the tournament so far. I think he's been excellent. And again, I think to some extent he's sort of front loaded his matches against opponents that are going to bring out his strengths. But I'll be interested to see what the rest of his tournament looks like as well. But
is this gimmick just being like a grimy Westerner, like a the common guy, like, you know what I mean? Like if you go through that entire roster, you can kind of feel the, like who people are and how they, I don't know. I just don't feel that with him. I just don't.
No, there's not really like a character gimmick there as right. such. It's just weird little fella from the Midlands who does cool wrestling and cool flips and stuff.
Right. And even Ospreay, like you could see when he kind of turned the corner and became somebody. I don't know. Maybe again, maybe I'm in wackadoo on this one, but I feel like that's the only thing that's missing. That's the only thing that's missing.
I'm going to talk about Kosei Fujita for a bit because I think for his part, he's really adding those rough edges, you know, that sandpaper you always talk about to his work. Because I think he's starting to bring that young punk gimmick to life by acting like a punk. He's being just a cocky, nasty little prick. Mm-hmm. I think he's successfully shed that, you know, the happy to be here, good boy, salaryman stink that lingers around many of these new dojo graduates. And I think he's carrying himself with the confidence and attitude of a man who knows he owns this division.
Yep. Yep.
And is probably going to be owning the heavyweight division whenever he decides to move up.
Yeah. That's good. Like, I think that's a good thing. Like, let's put it this way. He is the, and again, you sometimes, like when you start getting praise and you start getting acknowledged, like that helps build that confidence. But this is almost like he's the polar opposite of Master Wato. You know, he's the polar opposite of a guy who not only knows it, but has worked hard to get there and continues to work hard to improve. Yeah, there's something to be said about that where everything's clicking on all cylinders. And again, that might be an issue with Wato in the sense of, hey, maybe he doesn't feel like the company's behind him. Or maybe he feels like, you know, something is off with him. Maybe. I don't know. But yeah, when you have the confidence of the company and you know that you have the confidence of the company and you have the people behind him and you have people that are just yearning for him to succeed and he delivers in those spots. Yeah, that's a masterful combination, like a masterful combination, because even when you do falter and even when you do stumble a little bit, you've built up enough good grace that people can kind of overlook that. And again, then you go out there and you learn from that, and you improve. Yeah, he's the guy. I don't think there's any mistake. He knows it. We know it. The company knows it. Excellent. Like let's get there and let's get there quicker.
All right, let's wrap up with a few questions then. Lost Mind Brewing says, is this Dorky Reign one of the worst in the history of this junior championship? And there's a sort of piggyback point off that from the username's gone. I think this, it just says L dot dot dot. Why has it done that? I think it's Lady Guy Fieri. I'm sorry if I've got the username wrong. He says, I think he's hurt. And incidentally, this has caused one of the best of the super juniors in years. So yeah, there's some thoughts on Dockies right now.
Has he fallen out of grace? Because he used to be like a guy that people fawned over and loved to rally behind. Has his fall from grace? One, injuries haven't helped, right? That's for sure. But House of Torture, has that just totally fucking tanked everything for everybody?
I wonder if he's actually fully recovered after that injury.
I doubt it.
And maybe this House of Torture stuff is to cover for that to some extent.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of hard to grade in the sense that, you know, if you're at less than 100%, and what pro wrestler is at 100%? Okay, I get you. But like if you're working at 60%, 50%, it makes it pretty difficult. And, you know, again, House of Torture doesn't help. It matters by any stretch of the imagination. It's not one of my favorite reigns, let's put it that way. But it's kind of hard for me to wag a finger if that's the case. So I feel like it, like that needs to be taken with a little bit of grace. And but yeah, it hasn't fucking rung any bells for me, that's for sure.
Mark Anthony says, with a new Black Tiger and successful new Hayabusa, what are your thoughts on if and when we get a new Tiger mask? New Japan could use a hot pushed new Tiger mask. Four closes his career out in a matter of days.
Robbie X. What do you reckon? The new Tiger mask. No, I don't mean that. Do we need a new Tiger mask? I love Tiger mask.
The character going, the lore of the character.
Okay. I mean, I like Tiger Mask. Don't get me wrong. I love the lore of it. I don't know. I don't like. Do we need another Tiger Mask? I would. You know what? When was it? Well, I know there's a new Hayabusa who got the blessing from the original Hayabusa. I mean, honestly, I'm not going to lose sleep either way. I just think if you're a pro wrestler, especially in 2026, I would think that you would want to forge your own path and not be Tiger Mask 62, you know? I don't know. I probably wouldn't want it. I'm going to say pass for now.
And two more football questions here to wrap up. So Ben says, is Laguna's recent championship win an omen for England to bring it home this summer? I don't know. I can't really think about the World Cup because I think all the good players are going to be fucking exhausted.
Do you care about
the turnaround?
That?
Is like, not really. I probably will once it gets started, but I'm going to find it hard to get myself up for it after everything that's happened with Arsenal. I don't think that could match the highs of that. But, you know, ask me again if we sort of make it into the latter stage of the tournament. I might feel differently, but I just think all the players are going to be knackered and they benefit from a rest. Like the turnaround is like 10 days from the end of the Champions League final to the start of the World Cup, which is just crazy to me. So
they're pushing it.
Plus, I don't like FIFA. I think FIFA is a shitty organization. Right. And part of me feels like I should just boycott this World Cup entirely.
It's struggling here. Like they're trying to fucking make it a thing here. And trust me, I'm sure there are pockets of people that, and communities that, you know, they're all in on their countries going far, like they're trying, but the average Joe Philadelphian honestly doesn't give a flying fuck about the Ivory Coast. Right? Not only in football, but in general. I can't say that this is they're trying. The whole city has bent over and spread their ass cheeks open wide for fucking FIFA. But again,
it's so fucking expensive. It's ridiculous. The commodification of it that I just think is just an insult.
I think there are people who are going to go because of the novelty of the World Cup. But there are plenty of tickets available, Joel. You know, like face value tickets are plenty. The problem is face value tickets are like a fucking $1,000. And I hate to break the bad news. In this area, yes, are there people that love the football? Yes. Not enough to fill a 65,000 seat American football stadium in the summer where people are on vacation. And will there be people flying in and going, yeah, of course, absolutely. But people talking like it's going to shut down the city. No, it's going to be like a concert that they have every fucking weekend at the big boy stadium. It'll be traffic around the area, but everywhere else, nobody's going to fucking know the difference. And nobody really gives a fuck.
Last one, Martin says, what's the craziest thing you would do if Arsenal gets the Champions League as well this season?
We talked about this.
I said the Thai monk retreat. I don't know if that counts as something crazy. I'll do a tattoo. Fuck it.
I love it. That's what I wanted to hear. That's what I wanted to hear. Of a limp dick on your... We didn't mention what it was. That's what... That'd be so unbelievable.
Twat tattooed across my forehead.
Again, there's no placement rules. You get where you feel is comfortable and the design. But I think it would be nice to commemorate, have that permanently affixed to your torso or something, or arm, your big biceps or your meaty legs. Like that picture has shown. Can't wait to see those pictures of the cake. Cannot wait. I'm so happy for you still. I know you're riding the wave of it, but I love it. I love the fact that you can do that. So good week for you.
All right, I'm going back to scrolling my Twitter timeline now. So get lost, everyone.
See you.
Wrestling Omakase brings you a full-course meal of all of Japanese wrestling, men's and women's. Join me, a Japanese wrestling fan for over 20 years, along with a rotating cast of equally knowledgeable co-hosts, as we cover everything from New Japan and Stardom to NOAH, All Japan, DDT, Tokyo Joshi, Marigold, Sendai Girls, Dragon Gate, Gleet, Ice Ribbon, and even more stuff. If you're a fan of Japanese wrestling and you want coverage of the entire scene in one podcast, check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network each and every week. Get us wherever you get podcasts today.